Okay, good evening, everybody. Shalom Aleichem, and welcome back. Thank you so much for joining me once again for, it's hard to believe, the fourth session in our series in the essential takeaways from the COVID-19 crisis. Tonight, I would like to talk about a very, very unique takeaway, I believe, from the situation which we are experiencing right now. But I'll do so by way of pointing out that which, of course, we all recognize and appreciate and remember, and that is that this is the week of Shavua Shechalbo. In several days from now, we will be observing the day of Tisha B'Av, the day in which we absorb a period of Avelus, in which we mourn, an untold amount of tragedy and suffering that has taken place over the course of Jewish history. And there are many different windows that we have in which we can take a look and try to connect with these very, very significant historical events, starting with, and of course, as far as Tisha B'Av is concerned, most importantly, the Churban Beis HaMikdash, in addition to other very, very significant tikufos of tragedy and suffering over the course of our long galus. We look at Chazal, who are in certain circumstances very descriptive when talking about the unique pain and suffering that we have suffered as a people. There are stories that we have, traditions that we have within our communities, perhaps within our families. Of course, the day of Tisha B'Av, we are given an entire sampling of kinos, which also give us a very, very unique window into the suffering of the past. But there's also another entire area in which we don't typically think of this as being a place that we would go to learn about history in general, and particularly the very unique state of suffering of the Jewish people. But I referred to the many, many responsa, the Shailos HaTshuvos that have been written over the course of Jewish history. Each and every year on Tisha B'Av, when I introduce the kinos, I try to refer to at least one of the tshuvos from the Shailos HaTshuvos Mimam Akim of Ephraim Oshri, who was a Rav in the Kovno Ghetto, who composed many, many tshuvos which were published after the war. And what's most important, as far as Tisha B'Av is concerned, is not necessarily the details of the particular tshuva, even though it's in some very fascinating and very complicated and complex halachic discussions, but more importantly than the answers are the questions that people had to ask, finding themselves in such difficult and really unimaginable circumstances. Lahavdil, and I certainly don't mean in any way whatsoever to compare the circumstances of the past few months to the Crusades or the pogroms, and certainly not the Holocaust, but many years from now, there will be an entire literature of responsa that will tell the story of COVID-19, will tell generations from now that there was a period in history in which Jews had some very, very unique and perhaps even unprecedented questions. There were situations that required a whole new set of questions and answers, and this crisis has afforded us, I would say, the benefit of being able to get a very, very unique perspective, a little bit of a glimpse into a very, very important, essential, and a really very fundamental part of Jewish life and Jewish living and the Torah experience. Several months ago, actually on the night before Shavuos, I gave a shiur to my shul, in which I tried to give over sort of a sampling of some of the interesting questions that have come up. What I'd like to do with you right now is just quickly share my screen with you. We're not going to go through them right now, because that's not the my intention right now, but I want to share with you very quickly some of the slides that I did, just to give you a sense. I think we all know, but it's good to just focus for a moment on the array, the spectrum of questions that have come up over the past several months. This actually comes from a website called Halachapedia, which, you know, was a sort of Wikipedia type of format, but in which you see different categories of questions that are addressed on this website, ranging from tefillah to minyan to Shabbos davening, agomel, b'tikas chametz, bir chametz, selling chametz, buying chametz. And I'm not reading all these. I'm going through them quickly. Because agomel, tanas b'choros, obviously a lot of this has to do with Pesach, Sfiras Omer, Shavuos, Mikvah, Tefillas Kelim, Bris Mila, naming a girl, pidyon haben, bar mitzvahs, weddings, fast days, mezuzah, shalom bayis, etc. These are all categories, and there you have below links to tshuvos that have been published over the past several months, dealing with some of the very unique circumstances that we have faced over the past few months. And here you have a sampling of some actual tshuvos, some longer, some shorter, dealing with some very unique situations that really were, at least in our experience, unprecedented. How to arrange an Erev Tavshilin in a situation where the Rav of the city is unable to go ahead and to facilitate and to perform the preparation of an Erev by benefiting the entire community, involving necessarily, typically, the involvement of another person. Here in the situation where social distancing at the time was certainly much stricter than it is right now. So here you have a fascinating tshuva from Rav Shechter on that topic. Erev Chatzeros, dealing with the situation where many of us were locked out of our shuls. And the question, of course, being, you know, where exactly the box of matzah, which is traditionally, of course, the heart of the Erev, where that should be stored. Over here you have a question of benching Birchas HaGomel through Zoom. If a person, for whatever circumstance, for whatever the reasons were, had to bench Gomel, can he do so in the presence of a virtual minion, if you will, you would call, because typically Birchas HaGomel should be recited in the presence of a group of people. Questions in defining Safi Sakana, particularly in this very unique situation which we found ourselves. Here Rav Asher Weiss deals with a question whether it is permissible to bring tefillin into a hospital if it is possible that they will have to be discarded afterwards because of a concern for contamination and spread of infection. Here you have another tshuva from Fasher Weiss talking about whether it is permissible for a husband to escort his wife who goes into labor on Shabbos if he will not actually be able to go into the hospital. So just basically to take a trip with her, but then be forced to wait outside. Once again, a question that would have been unimaginable half a year ago, and now it has just become sort of part of the routine. Of course, we know that there are many situations where people simply cannot enter a hospital. And over here, a sample of some major discussions about how to make up many weeks and in some cases months of missed Torah reading. A fascinating halachic discussion, which once again, I think several months ago would have also been an interesting question, but perhaps it would have been, we would have considered in the realm of theory, too hypothetical, maybe irrelevant. Come on, what are the chances you get of an entire tzibur that's going to miss Kriyas HaTorah for months? And here, this is something that we just experienced. Here you have a sample, once again, of tshuvas written about how to resolve some of the very, very difficult contract questions and debates that emerged. People who had made reservations to attend Pesach programs that were canceled. Of course, parents who were concerned about having to pay tuition and having to continue to make not just payments but commitments when there was so much uncertainty about what the schools and the communities could offer. I'm going to stop sharing my screen right now, but I just wanted once again to sort of give you a sample, as if you didn't already know, which I'm sure you do, of some of the very, very interesting, and I think without exaggeration, thousands of questions. There are websites that have been created over the past few months dedicating to collecting and to filing and classifying and enabling people who are interested in either researching for their own interest or knowing exactly what to do in some of the very unique situations. So the question that you may be asking is, well, why is this so important? After all, the title of this series is Essential Takeaways. So when this is all over, hopefully soon, so why is this so important? Why was this particular development, namely that there was a situation which warranted so many new questions to be asked? So why does that, in and of itself, leave us with something that is so important, so valuable, something that I think we really should take with us going forward? So I would like to suggest five answers, very quickly. Number one, for those of us who have been paying attention throughout this entire process and ordeal, so we are able to see up close, in a very, very powerful way, how adaptable and, when necessary, flexible halacha is. Too often, many of us, unfortunately, see halacha as being inflexible, and perhaps even worse, sort of dry and stagnant. Halacha is something which doesn't really change, it just is what it is, and I need to know what am I supposed to do, and either I look it up, or I ask a shayla, or some combination of the above, v'zehu, that's it. That's the halacha. And we don't see halacha as being sort of a living process and a living experience. But the truth of the matter is, when we say v'dei anadavanin ki heim chayenu, that there's a certain life, that the Torah is a living Torah, that means more than just that it gives us life, it means more than just that it affects our life, it is literally a pulsating, living organism on a certain level. This should hopefully inspire us to ask questions, to make no assumptions. There are many situations in which we find ourselves in which we think, oh yeah, right, been there, done that. I think I had this Shiloh in the past. The situation I find myself in right now seems more or less similar. And so, you know, why do I have to go ahead and bother the rabbi? Why do I have to bother looking it up? I know the halacha. As if halacha, once again, is sort of dry and Torah is not adaptable and Torah doesn't flex itself when necessary to respond to very unique situations in which we find ourselves. This, of course, is all not true, and we unfortunately fail to appreciate one of the most inspiring aspects of our Torah, which sort of brings me to the next point, to the second point that I would make. Why is it so important that we take this with us? Because we are able to see how halacha and Torah is applicable in each and every generation, even in very unique and very different circumstances. For those who are familiar with the 13 animamins, the Ikari Amuna, which some of us say after davening, it's printed in our Sidurim, so the ninth animamin says, animamin b'emunah shleima, I believe with perfect faith, shezos ha-Torah lo tehei mukhlefes, v'lo tehei Torah cheres me'ez ha-borei yizbarach shemo. That this Torah, that the Torah that we have today, lo tehei mukhlefes, was never and will never be swapped for another. This is it. This is the Torah, and there is no other Torah me'ez Hashem yizbarach. So, on a certain level, what this basically means is that we believe with perfect faith that the Torah we have today is the same Torah that, you know, we've had for generations, since the very, very beginning of time, since Moshe was Mekabel Torah, as we say in Pirkei Avos, Moshe Kibel Torah Misinai, sorry, Yeshua, Yeshua's Akedim, it's the same Torah. And that is certainly not just a plausible, but I think that that is a correct and accurate understanding of this Ikar of Amunah. But I believe that there's a deeper and perhaps just as important idea that is being conveyed over here. And that is the eternal relevance of Torah. The immutability and the expression of Torah being a very vibrant, vibrant organism. One which continues to live and to adapt and is applicable in each and every situation in which we find ourselves. You know, there's a comment, a famous statement from the Zohar, which many of us are familiar with, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu was a staka baraisa ubari alma. HaKadosh Baruch Hu looked into the Torah, and he created the world. And often we say what that means is the Torah is sort of the blueprint of the world. And so therefore the world, rather than the Torah sort of being a reaction to or responding to circumstances in the world is really a response to, or the world is really a reflection of the truth, the immutable truth of Torah. The Torah is the blueprint. But again, it means, I think, something much more than that. In everything that we need, all the situations that we face, all the circumstances which we find ourselves, and we are looking for direction, we are looking for guidance, we are looking for something and someone to escort us and to assist us in navigating some of the most difficult and unprecedented circumstances that we have ever faced. So that's the Torah. The Torah provides us with that escort. The Torah provides us with that hand-holding. That's what it means, Estaka Baraisa Barayama. That it's all there. And we have been given a front seat. We've been given a very, very close-up, powerful demonstration of this over the past few months, in which our poskim have published thousands of tshuvos responding to circumstances, some of which weren't necessarily unprecedented historically, but certainly in our lifetime they were. But many of which were. The circumstances in which we found ourselves, the need to apply them to some very, very unusual and really just modern situations that we have just come to take for granted, these are unique. And they require the ability to look into the Torah and to recognize that there's an eternal prism which allows us to respond, to react, and to manage our way through every situation. You know, the Torah tells us that the various kelim in the Mishkan, so they had tabos, they had rings, and inside of the rings there were badim, there were poles, staves that were placed inside. And the badim were there, understandably, so that the Levim, when they would carry the kelim from one place to another, they would be able to handle them without touching them directly. So the Shulchan, the Menorah, the Mizbeach Hazav, they all had their taba'os, and then they would be lifted, and the Levim would carry them holding the poles. Stands to reason, obviously, therefore, that when the Mishkan came to rest and the kelim were not being moved, so the poles would be removed from the taba'os, from the rings, and the Shulchan Menorah, whatever it is, whichever one of the kelim would be standing there without its poles. However, the Torah tells us there's one exception to that rule, and that is the Aron. The Torah tells us, "B'tabos Aron yiyu abadim lo yasuru mimenu," that the poles are never to be removed. They stay there at all times. Now, the Torah doesn't tell us why, so there's a lot of chomer l'drush here, and there are many different perspectives that we can take. But one of the most important and powerful ideas that we can learn from this is that the Torah is something which is always ready and always capable of moving from one place to the next. There's never a point in which we say, okay, the Torah is here, it is now stationary, it has now come to rest, and so therefore we can take the poles out. The Badim has served no purpose. We have seen firsthand over the past few months how it was critical, it was really essential for the survival of the Jewish people, you know, certainly on a spiritual level, to be able to watch the Torah take us from one situation to the next, and to escort us and to guide us and to lead us and to inform us, and when necessary to give us chizik, to inspire us through some very, very difficult situations. So the Badim remain in the Aron forever. L'yasur mimenu, they're never removed because the Torah never comes to rest. But the third important takeaway from this important feature of the COVID crisis is that we can hopefully recognize with greater appreciation and I would say even marvel the incredible poskim that our community has. I'm not going to name any poskim in particular. We all know that we are fortunate, and I know that there may be different people who are listening from different communities, and maybe you have your Rav, you have your posek or your poskim. It's irrelevant, because what matters right now is not the who, but how fortunate we are as a people to have so many qualified poskim who have made themselves not just available, but accessible to us at all times. And you know, we have, and we always do, very unique challenges that we face in each and every generation, but we also have unique individuals who are able to lead us through. So while, as I've tried to make the point, the Torah itself provides us with an immutable, adaptable, flexible, applicable set of laws which can address all the circumstances in which we face, it is necessary at all times to have the Chachmei HaMasorah who are able to take the Torah and to teach us how it is to be applied in all the various circumstances in which we face. You know, we daven every day, Hashiva Shofteinu Kivarishanav Yoatzeinu Kivatchila. We ask HaKadosh Baruch Hu to restore the Sanhedrin and to bring us back to a place where we have Chachamim of the highest caliber, of the highest stature, are able to teach us and are able to lead the people through a very comprehensive and a true understanding of Torah. That bracha was actually inspired by a pasuk that we just read this past Shabbos in the Haftarah, the whole idea that there was a time when we had incredible leaders, shoftim, yoatzim, where we had chachamim of the highest caliber. And it may be true, that the gedolim of one generation don't seem on the surface to be as great, but Chazal are very quick to warn us that we should never take that attitude. We should never say, oh, it's not like it used to be. That every generation has the gedolim that it needs, that it deserves, and we are so fortunate, we are so blessed to have so many poskim among us who have been able to lead us in such an extraordinary and such a remarkable way. And I think, and this sort of leads me into number four, if you're keeping track over here, that this is also a mechayev, it should be, for each and every one of us to remember that while, you know, we sometimes feel armed and ready to deal with a particular question that comes up our way, we have resources today and the ability to look things up, to Google them. Sometimes people like to joke, I'm going to ask Rav Google. The reality is that we should not presume necessarily to have the experience, the qualifications, the insight, the knowledge of our poskim. And again, the last few months have been an incredible demonstration of just that. hundreds of pages of tshuvas that have been published in a very short period of time, thousands of pages, from all corners of the earth, from individuals who are not just geniuses, and individuals who don't merely have an incredible handle on Kol HaTorah Kulo, which is what is needed to be a posek, but just as importantly, understand and appreciate the nuances of science, of the circumstances in which we find ourselves, the social issues, some of the challenging situations in which we find when, you know, a modern world is brought to its knees during a really, in our generation, an unprecedented global pandemic. Regarding this point, I would like to share with you a comment from the Tiferes Yisrael and his Perish on Pirkei Avos. In Pirkei Avos, in the sixth chapter, so there's a famous mishnah which talks about the 48 Dvarim Shatar nicknames behind it. 48 ways and pathways, not separate ones, but really features that are necessary in order for a person to fully and comprehensively be Kona Torah. And one of them, it says, is Lo Megis Libo B'Talmuda. Lo Megis Libo B'Talmuda. So most Mefarshim would probably say to be Megis Libo means to be a Balgaiva. Gasav Salev means a person who has sort of an inflated heart. So, understandably, if a person wants to be Kona Torah, so you can't be a Balgaiva. We all know that the reason why Moshe Rabbeinu is Rabbeinu is because, as the Torah tells us, he was the greatest Anav. That there is a direct correlation between one's level of humility and one's ability to properly be Kona Torah. So if you write on your test, don't be a Balgaiva, you get full credit. But the Tiferes Yisrael says that's not what it means. He says, I'll prove it to you. Because everything else on this list is not a don't do this. They're all positive things that we must pursue. V'lo megis libo b'tamudo is not a maila, he says. He says that's menias chisar nora. All that means is that you should avoid falling into a terrible trap, being strapped with a terrible deficiency. So he says, I don't think that's what it means. What does it mean? He says, Perusho milas gas, kimo, chazal of an expression, libo gasba. But so what does that mean? Shnei be'yadam hamakirim zed zeh, she'enim zboshin zeh mizeh. There are two people who are acquaintances one with another, and they're so close that they're not really embarrassed when they interact one with another. Sheba osa davar she'enu shel tzniyus b'fanav, that the person will do something that, you know, I wouldn't do in front of everyone. That I'm comfortable letting my hair down, so to speak, in front of someone. The Hachanami, when it says over here, enu gas libo b'talmudo, what that means is, she'enu choshev esatzmo k'ragalima. A person can't have the attitude when it comes to Torah, yeah, I know this, I learned this, yeah, I went through this many times, I know it. Using this mashal by way of Chazal, it's like a person who's talking to his caller, they're not even married yet, they're just engaged, and they don't really know each other that well. And so therefore, when this person studies Torah, yesh lo boshes panim milasuach b'machshosav chafshiyim b'inyanei ha'umanos v'hamitzvah shalimed mimena. A person will show a certain degree of reverence and restraint and not just go ahead and just feel, oh yeah, this is what this means, that this means that means, certainly when talking about very, very important, profound, and lofty ideas. It's not just humility. It's understanding I have to know my place. And he goes on to say that Moshe Rabbeinu was afraid to look too close, as the pasuk says, "Vayaster panav ki yoremi abit elokim," and so therefore he was zochet this great madrega, as the Torah tells us, "Usmunas Hashem yabit." That dafka because of the fact that Moshe Rabbeinu had this sense of boshes panim, that he felt unworthy, that he recognized that there's so much I don't know. It's precisely for that reason why he was zochet to the greatest accomplishments and the greatest levels in Torah acquisition and Torah learning. And so therefore, having an opportunity to see not just the availability and the accessibility and the genius of our poskim, but to see the way they've handled this, to see the way, I mean, you have people, Lahavdil and the CDC, and people are making very big, big decisions regarding how we're going to manage this on a social end and politically and medically. But in our world, we have had poskim, again, who have literally carried our entire community on their backs. And it's dafka, again, an opportunity for us to remember, as the Mishnah Navos teaches, v'lo megis libo b'tamudo. We should never feel, oh yeah, halach, I know this, I know how to handle, I have a Mishnah Berurah also. So I don't need a rabbi, I don't need a posek, I have a Mishnah Berurah. So I think that's what we've learned over the past few months. You know, Mishnah Berurah is an essential for every Jewish home. But Mishnah Berurah is not going to take us through every situation that we will encounter throughout our lives. Finally, I think it gives us the opportunity to focus on halacha in general, something which we often fail to think about and appreciate. Several years ago, Moshe Bain, president of the OU, he wrote an article where he was talking about some of his observations of the Orthodox community. I'd like to read you a quote. He wrote that too many observant Jews have a commitment to Torah and halacha that is impressively broad, but a relationship with God that is admittedly shallow. They follow halacha with great care and often sacrifice, but realize little meaning and even less favor. Like the tepid marriage of a deeply loyal middle-aged couple, the commitment is there, but what happened to the passion? Beneath the surface, there's annoying fear that such commitment is to a Judaism of culture, not of spirituality. Connection to Avodas Hashem has long been supplanted by an urgency to fit in and an eagerness for personal peace of mind and fulfillment. We have come to experience, hopefully, and to see, and if not, it's not too late to pay attention to the incredibly incredible complexities and the layers of halacha. We should not look at halacha so superficially and say, oh yeah, I know that, been there, done that. We should recognize and appreciate how it is alive, and it has the ability to infuse our lives each and every day. We don't need to be experiencing a crisis like this in order to appreciate how, again, how relevant, how applicable, how adaptable, how flexible, how available our poskim are. These are lessons that we can and should carry with us every single day of our lives. In conclusion, I'm going to conclude the way Talmud Bavli ends. The last three lines of Maseches Nida, which is the end of Talmud Bavli. Famous statement that we know. Tana de Be'eliyahu, kol hashana halachos b'chol yom, muvtach lo shehu ben olam haba. That a person who studies halachos every day, muvtach lo, this person can be certain that he is a ben olam haba. Shnemar, as the pasuk says, halichos olam lo, Chazal say, atikri halichos elo halachos. Olam lo, olam, in this case, olam haba, is available to one, to a person who takes halachos with him everywhere he goes. And I saw a very, very nice pshat as to what exactly this Gemara means, found in the Sefer Hegyonei Avos, who quotes from a Rebbe Atzadik, Rebbe Yezer Lippmann, that there are very few times where Chazal use this expression, muvtach lo shehu ben olam haba. Chazal say that, yeah, that this person is a ben olam. What says muvtach lo shehu ben olam haba? What exactly does that mean? So he suggests something very beautiful. He says, you know, sometimes when you're traveling from one place to another, there are many different roads to get you there. There's not only one way. But a person who's smart knows, you know, if you want to get there safely, so you take the highway, you take the roads that have been maintained, the roads that have been tested, the roads which see regular travel. You don't go ahead and venture out on some broken down, you know, dilapidated bridge which hasn't been maintained over the course of many years. You don't know where that's going to lead you. And he points out that, and I don't have time right now to give the examples, but Chazal give examples of certain chachamim who pointed out, you know, there are many ways that a person can get to Olam Haba. And some of these ways carry some pretty significant risks. He quotes the Gemara in Erevin, which talks about the chachamim who were sort of daring each other to put themselves in some very tempting situations, thinking, knowing, hoping that they would overcome, but using that as sort of a springboard to Olam Haba. It's a famous Gemara in Tanis, which tells us that Eliyahu HaNavi identified certain badchanim, certain like jokers, clowns, if you will, in the shuk that made people laugh, that were considered bnei Olam Haba. His point being that there are ways that a person could become a ben Olam Haba, but they're risky. They're fraught with challenges along the way. No guarantees. Chazal tell us that a person who commits his life to halacha, not just the observance of halacha, but kol hashon halachas b'chol yom, muvtach lo shehu ben olam haba. There's no question that you will make it there, because that is the safest way to get there. That is, you know, you'll forgive the road, perhaps less traveled, but that is the safest road to travel. That is the best way to get there. Because regardless of what your motivation is, of course, the Gemara in Psachim, Lolam Yasek Adam B'Tor Mitzvah, Safa Pisha Lolishma, even a person doesn't necessarily have the most pure intention, Shemitoch Shalolishma, Bolishma, but a person will ultimately recognize, Halichos, Atikri Halichos, it's true there are many different ways, but Halachos, to go by way of Halacha, so that is the safest route, that is the tested route, that is the way that we know that we will get to our destination safely, Muvtach Lo, Shuhu Ben Olam Haba. So my fourth suggestion of an essential takeaway from the COVID crisis is that we should remember that we are so fortunate. We are so fortunate that we have a Torah that is alive, that is relevant, that pulsates with life and relevant each and every day. We are zochet to have poskim who have been able to carry us through this very, very difficult and challenging time. And we should all be inspired to continue to pay attention to the incredible gift that we have. Thank you very much, everybody. Have a wonderful night and a meaningful fast.